Hello and welcome to this edition of Community and University, your one-stop shop for the latest on community and economic development. I'm your host, Jeffrey Franklin, and today I'm joined by Chris Miller and Mary Zumbrunnen, two of the authors of our 2019 co-learning plans. Before we begin, do you guys want to tell me anything about yourselves?
I'm Mary Zumbrunnen. I am a consultant. I own a company called One Community Consulting. I am currently a Rising Tide Fellow at the City of Adrian, and working on all things community economic development.
And I'm Chris Miller. So I'm the economic developer for the City of Adrian, which is a small community of a little over 20,000, kind of in the south central area of Michigan. So.
These are two of our authors for our co-learning plans for the 2019 year. They will be presenting at our Innovate Michigan Summit August 29th, Thursday, August 29th. If you would like to come to that, you can always go to the Michigan State University Center for Regional and Economic Innovation website, reicenter.org, and you can register to come to that event. So moving forward, from my understanding, you guys are working on a plan to kind of create a toolkit to best understand how to utilize these new opportunity zones. First, start with what is an opportunity zone, and then we'll talk about the toolkit in a little bit.
Sure. So an opportunity zone is an entity that was created in the federal budget in 2017. It was a several years in the making, a bipartisan effort, and it was an idea about how to bring resources into traditionally underserved communities. So as you look across the country or across the state or across communities, there are communities that for whatever reason have not had resources in them and has not had to not been in a position to bring resources into them, so in particular investment into those communities. It's very difficult to have a vibrant local economy without capital happening and investment occurring. So the idea behind the opportunity zones was it provides an incentive for typically wealthy individuals that have capital gains taxes to pay. It was a way essentially for them to shelter those capital gains and invest them into one of these underserved communities. And if they maintain the investment for a decade, an ownership position, an equity position there, essentially 100% of the capital gains penalty is forgiven, or the tax is forgiven. So our work has been, at this point, working with colleagues across the country to try and identify how we can put a structure in place that allows some measure of local control, local investment or ownership, some way to be sure that those resources that come to the community actually do the good that they were intended to do.
With this being so new, creating a toolkit has to be somewhat challenging because we don't really know the best way to do it. So what have you found? What were some of the surprises you found while you've been going about creating this toolkit?
I think as we put together the toolkit, it's trying to figure out a way, considering this is new, and then we're trying to figure out a form and fashion to make sure that there is this is as socially equitable as possible and that it's a community investment, truly. Trying to figure out how to provide that information in a way that's digestible, that's not text and policy heavy, where people aren't getting lost in the weeds and the details, and figuring out how can we go through this so it's like plug and play, particularly for those other small and rural areas that may not have demonstration projects out there about them. You may not be able to pick up something and see them in a magazine. Like, what does that mean for the small cities that otherwise are not seeing investment or, you know? So we're learning as we go.
Yeah.
And we're building as we fly. And we're crafting the strategy as we make this. So it truly is like let's all go together and learn from one another.
I mean, you're really just kind of trailblazers right now. I mean, it's never really been done.
Well, it's information delivery.
Yeah.
You know? So what's the best form and function of the toolkit so that
right.
people can actually access it and then
right. and
learn
be
from
able
us,
to read it.
learn from our mistakes and our
right.
and our successes as well.
Yeah, it's easy to get caught up in academic and jargony writing.
Yeah.
So that's cool to see.
And that's the advantage, I think, of working both in an existing local community as well as something as abstract as the legislation that produced this, this program. And
mm-hmm.
so, because we're thinking all the time, what does this look like? How do we do this? how do we make it actually happen in our community? But it is challenging because, you know, in the legislation, there was nothing that addressed the community side of this. It was exclusively about what incentive can we provide to wealthy individuals to put their money in some community that is not theirs, maybe on the other side of the country,
right,
that is going to get them the return that they expect, because there is that piece. You know, if you don't satisfy the investor, the investment isn't going to come.
Right.
So they tried to structure that on a federal level so that the capital gains benefit was so good that they would come in.
Within the legislation, how are opportunity zones like designated? How did Adrian become an opportunity zone, in other words?
So each state governor had to submit a list of communities to the feds, and then the feds made the ultimate decision. I think that they largely followed what the state governors provided to them. So we were, like other communities, we were kind of tuned in and were aware this legislation was coming. And essentially what we had to do was submit an application to the governor, this was Governor Snyder at that point in time, that submitted individual census tracts within our community. And we knew that the program was aimed at lower income census tracts. So when we took a look at, the city of Adrian has 5 census tracts within it. And when we took a look at that, 4 of the 5 were under the national average. And so we submitted all 4 of those census tracts, and the governor selected our lowest income census tract, which was our southernmost census tract, as the one that was eligible for this. And then the federal government approved that. I think there are 288 census tracts in Michigan that were identified as opportunity zones.
So because you guys are doing it in such a community-oriented way, is there any way that potential listeners anywhere really in the state of Michigan can get involved with this at this point?
Yes, is the short answer to the to the question. But it's going to depend on a couple of things. So as a community member, if you happen to have capital gains tax, then regardless of your income, again, capital gains can happen to anyone ultimately, but you could look for an opportunity to invest and to avoid that tax if you were so inclined to do that. In your individual community, again, there are a lot of them in Michigan, so you can find out whether your own community is an opportunity zone, has an opportunity zone within it, and then call up the local unit of government and say, hey, I'm interested in this, and is there something I can do to help? I can tell you, as a representative from a local unit of government, when we get a call that says, I'd like to help, or I'd like to become involved, or I'd like to invest, we always say, great. You know, in our case, we have some community members who are working with us on this, who have recognized the potential importance of it. So I don't know, what else would you?
Well, I guess I would say that, particularly around the community capital piece, when I think about what makes this project new and different, obviously it's new, but what really differentiates it is the opportunity for social impact. So from my perspective as a fellow, one thing that's been really interesting to me is learning about community investment, community capital. And so I will just say working with Chris has been awesome because him and his colleagues, I think, are really leading the way.
The summit is coming up in August, and you guys will both be presenting there. Tell us a little bit about what your presentation is going to be like. What will people get out of it?
I think that we'll go through our process for making it as inclusive as possible. So we'll talk about our strategy behind it as far as making it known to folks that there is this opportunity, an opportunity within the opportunity zone. It's like, we're going to try not to repeat that word over and over.
Yeah.
You might hear us say Oz. And so we'll be talking a little bit about the strategy, engaging folks, doing some public sessions, maybe some education and outreach. This, you know, the state has already been doing a lot of this, but as far as what that really means, like boots on the ground for your neighbors, and hooking them in is going to be important. So we'll talk about that. The marketing of it, creating a prospectus, or the way that we've gone through our tract and looking at the properties and shuffling through that and figuring out, like, what do we want to go after? There is opportunity within the opportunity zone, but zeroing in and figuring it out, which one do you really, if you want to get this done short, measurable outcomes is very important. And so, like, not necessarily what's just the lowest hanging fruit, but how do we really achieve this within a measured time frame? So we'll talk through the actual process of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll also walk through the toolkit and show how to use it. So
cool.
What else, Chris?
Yeah, I would say, you know, we're obviously going to talk about what our first person experience is on this. We will describe it right up to that moment of the conference, and we'll also talk about going forward. So there'll be a practical application piece here, which I think will, because it will be speaking from our experience, that will be beneficial, and we'll also be relying on some of my colleagues across the country, and in a couple of places where this process that we're talking about and the structure that we're talking about may be further along than us, but we can provide that that information on how you might be doing. So hopefully save some folks some time if they've got an opportunity zone in their community, if not much has happened on it, or if it's unclear how they can go. And I think to alert them of the potential challenges, because there may be folks out there that go, oh, this could be fabulous, and they're not thinking anything about local engagement in it or local control of it or local investment. The whole idea of local investing right now is a brand new one, really, for most folks. If you talk to most people, they've never invested in a local business or a local project. They wouldn't even know how to go about it. So we'll talk about some of those things pretty specifically as well.
And you kind of led into my final question. So after the summit, after the research is all done, or at least this level of the research with REI, what are the next steps? What are the more boots on the ground next steps after you create the toolkit? How do we get it out there? How do people actually go about using what you've researched for them?
Well, and one piece I think to add to that is the opportunity fund and the maintenance of it and the management of it,
right.
And then the continuing community governance and making sure that folks are aware of progress and what's going on. So what's the projected vision for the future and how are they influencing that? So those are questions that by the time the summit comes along, we won't have the answers to, but we can certainly speak to it and what we think next steps will be. But at
sure.
at that point, we're still going to be in the kind of the strategy portion of it.
Yeah, and I think obviously this, the toolkit is a starting place just because this whole process is evolving now. And so I think we will look for mechanisms to continue to upgrade that and to add to it. Certainly look at Michigan State as a mechanism and a vehicle for getting that word out and the good community economic development work that is being done here. And we'll look for other partners. The MEDC has been a great partner on investment crowdfunding and is now supporting a local investor training program that's being piloted in some communities across the state. Michigan is the only state that's doing that, so we like the fact that Michigan is leading in this, and we want to take advantage of this opportunity zone in a similar way, make sure that we can see the benefit in the 288 communities in Michigan that have opportunity zones in them.
I want to thank you guys so much for taking the drive out here. I know it's far to get all the way from Adrian to Lansing. That's all the time we have for today's episode of Community and University. I would like to extend the Michigan State University Center for Regional Economic Innovation's greatest thanks to Mary Zimbrunnen and Chris Miller. They drove out a long way to get here. And if you would like to hear more about their project, you can always hear them present at the Innovate Michigan Summit August 29th. Again, you can register to attend on the reicenter.org under the events tab.